From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In their big survey last year, the American Psychological Association found millennials, 18 to 33, were the country's most stressed out age group. This year, for the first time, it's teenagers who take that unwelcome title. Teenagers, more stressed now than American adults, and with potential lifelong consequences. This hour on Point, we're looking at the roots and implications of teen stress. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Do you see it? Teens pinning the needle on stress. Why? And with what consequences? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me first today from Scranton, Pennsylvania, is psychologist Dr. David Palmiter. He helped devise the latest Stress in America survey for the American Psychological Association. He's a professor of psychology at Marywood University in Scranton. Dr. David Palmiter, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
Were you all surprised to find that teens have now taken this kind of unwelcome title?
Not really, because I'm also a clinician and work a lot with these teens. We have sort of a big problem in our country where most kids, by the time they reach adulthood, will have experienced a mental health problem, but only a small minority get care for it. So these results are very consistent with the experience in the trenches with what teens go through.
Tell us about your survey, what you ask and what you found.
Well, first thing we did was ask survey respondents to indicate what they believe was a healthy level of stress. You know, if you go over this mark, you're in an unhealthy range. And teens rated that number on from 1 to 10 as a 3.9. But they estimated their stress to be a 4.6 during the summer and a 5.8 during the school year. So it's a pretty significant, in a pretty significant way, teens are telling us that they believe that their stress is unhealthy and excessive, especially during the school year.
How does that compare now with other age groups in this year's survey?
Well, the adults reported their what they believe was to be an unhealthy cutoff or unhealthy stress as a 3.6, but they rated their average stress as a 5.1. So in terms of the school year stress compared to the general stress rate, the teens are rating themselves higher than adults in their stress level.
Did you have a significant portion of teens, Dr. Palmiter, who described even higher stress levels?
Yes, there was a percentage of teens that indicated that their stress increased in the past year. About a third of them did. And then another third reported they predict that their stress will increase significantly in the following year.
And I'm looking, I think, at some of your results here showing something like more than a quarter, describe their stress as 8 or 9 or 10 on a 10-point scale, right up at the top.
It can be very intense. The top things that teens report they're worried about or concerned, stressed about are school at 83%, life after school at 69%, and family having enough money at 65%. A close fourth, and I hear this a lot in my practice, is managing time at 59%. So they're really feeling like there's more on them than there is time and resource to accomplish very often.
We have a kind of conflicting images of teenage years in our minds. You know, this starts to date an observer, but kind of the happy days, kickback teenage image, and then the stressed out nose to the grindstone, must get into great college, must achieve in every extracurricular image. How do you paint these years these days, and what's an appropriate balance? We want some tension in there. We want kids working hard to study hard, I guess, but what's an appropriate level of stress for teen years?
Well, Tom, in my practice, what I see, the kids who have that unscheduled time you talk about often, ironically, are teens that have parents who are disengaged, you know, because the parents' own stress level doesn't leave them engaged with their kids around some of these concerns. Otherwise, I find that what you just, the latter category seems to be more common. The area that I often look to make some wiggle room with is homework. The research suggests that we may be assigning too much homework and that it doesn't have the return for the investment of time once you get about a certain volume. So that's usually where I'll find that. But a lot of this, I think, is back-ended from what college admissions departments seem to be looking for, you know, especially those schools that have the rejection rates of, you know, they're rejecting 60% or more of their applicants. You know, those schools are telling kids it's not good enough anymore to get good grades and good standardized scoring. You got to have the thing. You know, you got to be the awesome gymnast. You got to be the person that founded the club that they talk about in the state legislature. You know, you got to have that spark, that thing, and that quest for that. I think in my own mind is part of what tips these kids over the edge.
Do teenagers know how to recognize their stress and take measures to deal with it?
No, they don't. You know, and we've got to keep in mind that humans' brains develop into the early mid-20s, and we see in our survey that, for instance, over half of the teenagers report that they don't believe stress affects their physical or mental health. And when we look at some of their coping, 46% cope with video games, 43% going online, watching TV or movies, a little over a third. And responses to stress, eating unhealthy foods, about a quarter, skipping meals, about a quarter, neglecting school, 21%. So they're very much telling us that they need us. They're screaming independence. They're screaming, get out of my face. I need to be my own guy, my own gal. But they're letting us know through their behaviors that they very much need us. And that's the art of parenting that I'm sure you'll be talking about the rest of the hour, you know, how to find that balance between promoting independence but also being in there in ways that our teens clearly need us to be engaged.
What about lifelong consequences? There's some reference to this in the survey report of high teenage year stress.
Yes, the medical literature suggests that, you know, this kind of stress produces inflammation even in teens, which eventually can lead to heart disease, and immune systems are attacked with increased stress. So you have increased colds and viral infections. Across the board, though, all humans, we have these genetic vulnerabilities, and stress brings them out sooner and more poignantly, these vulnerabilities that we all carry within.
So, and what about in terms of future ease or peace of mind? If you're stressed as a teenager, are you not figuring out how to be at ease?
Well, I think that's a very good question. And as a clinician, my suggestion is the sooner we learn a life skill, the better, more effective it's likely to be. The longer we go without learning an important life skill, the harder it is to pick up. So we have evidence that people across the lifespan often don't know how to respond to stress effectively. But when they do, their stress is different. So in both teens and adults in the survey, for instance, just the tripod often of health, physical activity, diet, and sleep, those in the samples, teens and adults, who were doing better in those three areas reported lower levels of stress than those who weren't doing well in those areas. So I think that learning this in adolescence is a key thing. And part of it, that too, is thinking of this as a family issue. You know, we can't attack this in a teen without also thinking about needing to attack it with parents.
How big a red flag are your survey's findings for us about American teens and their state health of mind?
They're huge, Tom. Imagine this scenario where about 90% of our kids had dental problem by the time they hit adulthood, but only about 20% of them got dental care. And when they did, it was often not evidence-based. I mean, images of us walking around with our knuckles dragging on the ground come to mind. Yet those numbers are exactly what's true about our kids' mental health. It's tragic. It shouldn't happen. It's completely prehistoric. And we need to be better as a country at screening kids for mental health problems. For instance, I'm a big advocate for in every pediatric well visit, having parents and teens fill out the pediatric symptom checklist. It's a instrument in the public domain. It's free. It takes just a few minutes to complete, and it asks the questions, further evaluation warranted. Just that one simple change alone could have massive positive implications for some of these data we're seeing.
Dr. David Palmiter joins us from Scranton, Pennsylvania. He is there at Marywood University. Helped design the big new survey. The results just out. Teens at the top of the heap in terms of stress in this country. Dr. Palmiter, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
With us now from Philadelphia is Michael Bradley, a psychologist specializing in adolescent behavior, author of a number of books on teenage behavior, including When Things Get Crazy with Your Teen. Michael Bradley, thank you very much for being here.
That's my pleasure, Tom.
I've seen you talking about whether or not teens feel in control and saying that today, compared to years past, American teens do not feel in control of their own lives. Is that part of the issue here?
I believe it's a big part of the issue. We've got some good literature that compares how teens view the issue of control in their lives over the past several decades. And there's a very clear trend that today's teens feel much less in control of the outcome of their lives than teens of even 40 years ago.
Is that because, why, their expectations of jumping over some high bars are greater, or parents are in their lives too much, or why?
Well, we don't know definitively. I can tell you that I think most of the researchers are saying it has to do with a shift, a couple of shifts in the culture that have to do with kids seeing their goals as extrinsic as opposed to intrinsic. When we look at how kids used to set their goals 30, 40, 50 years ago, they would talk about things like developing a meaningful sense of significance, purpose in their lives. Today, kids tend to set goals as material wealth, getting the toys and the cars. Interestingly, that's a much more difficult thing to do, particularly in this economy and the way things have shifted for young people today. So that's part of the hopelessness that we see with young people.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about teen stress, now greater than adult stress. In America, we're looking at why and the long-term implications, looking at what to do about it. Here's a little bit from Lexi Butt. This is a high school senior in Prospect High School in Illinois, talking with the Associated Press last year about what stresses her out.
For me, it's college and having to apply, and all the stress was just building up. And it's also school and tests and finals especially. There's just too much.
Things can get really rough. Just last Friday at Bend High School in Oregon, school went into lockdown after a student shot himself in school in a classroom in front of classmates. Brian Wallace, the father of one of those students, spoke about trying to contact his son at school.
We were trying to get a hold of my son, and he wasn't responding. And he finally responded, and apparently the incident, he witnessed it, happened right in his class.
It's all across the country. Newton, Massachusetts, our backyard here. In this school year, 3 suicides, turning a lot of heads, getting a lot of attention. Talking with WBUR's Radio Boston this week, Lila McCain, the mother of Karen Douglas, a senior at Newton North High School who committed suicide in October, empathized with stressed-out teenagers.
I feel for the teenagers of today. They clearly have a very stressful environment. Social media doesn't help. They have to realize that life isn't perfect, and that's the beauty of it. And it's okay to not have good days, you know, and it's perfectly normal to not be perfect. And I really feel like we Photoshop our lives. You know, we share, you know, all the good things on Facebook and social media, etc. But there's so much more to life than that.
They're a family where it's really hit home. Michael Bradley joins us from Philadelphia. Psychologist specializes in adolescent behavior. Kristen Race joins us as well right now from Steamboat Springs, Colorado. She practices child, family, and school psychology, expert in the neurology of stress, author of Mindful Parenting. Kristen Race, thank you very much for being with us. Were you surprised to see these numbers of teens being the most stressed group, age group in America, Kristen?
You know, Tom, I really wasn't surprised. We're in the midst of what I call generation stress, which really refers to a generation of incredibly stressed out parents raising a generation of stressed out kids. Parents are more stressed than they've ever been, and the stress is contagious. When parents feel stressed, the whole family feels it. And unfortunately, our teens don't have great role models in terms of how to manage this stress. Adults aren't doing a great job managing their stress, so teens don't really have a place to turn to learn effective stress management skills.
So are you saying teen stress is being kind of caught like a contagion from their parents, or is it the circumstances of their own young lives producing it? Not that those are two different things, but you know what I mean, Kristen?
Absolutely. Tom, I think it's a combination of things. We have, in terms of stress being contagious, in our brain we have what are called mirror neurons, and these neurons reflect the emotions that we witness around us. So if mom's stress and anxiety neurons are firing, the area of her toddler or teen's brain that registers stress and anxiety is firing as well. So they definitely pick up on the emotions around them, the stress that their parents may be feeling. But life today for a teen is also very different. Teens today have 50% less free time than they did a generation ago. They get an hour less sleep, and they spend 53 hours a week interacting with screen media. All of these factors cause stress in the brain that impacts their behavior, their mood, their attention, and their ability to learn.
Michael Bradley, you've been practicing for a long time, 30 years or so. What do you see? Where do you look for explanation as to why the level of teen stress has changed?
Well, I agree with Kristen. It's a multifactorial sort of thing, but their world is certainly very different than the world most of us grew up in. And that brave mother that was talking about the loss of her child touched on something I feel might be the most critical aspect culturally, which is life is not perfect, but the culture seems to be telling the kids it's supposed to be perfect. The biggest change I've seen over the past two decades with teenagers is the striving for perfection and then an inability to cope if they fall short. And that's when we create stress by giving people impossible goals, putting them in an impossible situation. That's when stress occurs. And the culture promotes this issue of perfection with kids. You're talking about the academic perfection, sport perfection. Now we have physical physiognomy perfection, goals that no one can achieve. And the big shift therapeutically now, what we're trying to do to respond to this, we call it the third wave, is teaching kids to accept the imperfection and saying, that is not going to change. How do you change in response to that fact?
So are you saying, Michael Bradley, are you saying that teens in earlier years had greater coping skills, or they had lower, more achievable goals, or both?
I think both. I think they knew, I certainly knew growing up, the world was very imperfect. We had survivors from the Great Depression, survivors from world wars, and we understood that perfection was something that didn't happen. Surviving with a sense of serenity was a wonderful goal. We didn't ask for a whole lot. But if you take a look at the culture, what the media promotes with kids is this unrealistic picture of what life is supposed to be. They cannot achieve that. And as parents, we also contribute to that. Kristen's right. We become stressed trying to promote that for our kids. We try to promote, ironically, a world in which they will not have any stress, and there is no such thing. Rather, we have to teach them to accept the world as it is and say, how do we learn to live with that stress in a happy way?
This issue of teen stress is one with very real-world consequences. It hits home for all kinds of people, all kinds of families, and we've got them calling in right now. Michael Bradley in Philadelphia, Kristen Race in Colorado, please stand by. I want to go first to Donna, calling from Nashville, Tennessee. Donna, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
This hits home, and it's such a beneficial topic. My daughter, Sunday night, out of the blue, finished her biology homework, went downstairs, and tried to commit suicide.
Sunday night? You mean 3 or 4 days ago?
Yes. She's still in the hospital now. I've sat for days watching her have seizures. She's tachycardic, and her respiratory rate just drops.
What's the prognosis for your daughter, Donna?
Well, she's in therapy now. They're trying to get to the root of it. She's brought everything in from having eaten too much one day to having made a C in one of her honor classes. Last fall, we started on a really good regimen of exercise and eating healthy.
Yeah.
And that just really seems to have added to her stress because she's beating herself up over having eaten something Saturday that she shouldn't have.
Oh, boy. Did you see warning signs, Donna? I mean, did you see this coming? Had she spoken about it or said, I might do this or anything?
Nothing at all. I mean, and this is so totally out of her character. She fell into a group of friends. She's always the one that wants to help and do for people. Mm-hmm. She fell into a group of friends that have this cutting thing they're doing. And that's part of what she did. And when that didn't work, she went to my purse and took my medicine, which is what induced the seizures.
Oh, Donna, all of our empathy is with your family right here. Kristen Race, come in if you would. I mean, here's Donna's family's in crisis right now. Her daughter tried to commit suicide Sunday. What do you make of the outline of this story? And is this something people can foresee? Are the things to look for? Can parents know when the stress is hitting that kind of level, Kristen?
Unfortunately, Donna is not alone, and this is a real epidemic that is, we're in crisis in this country when it comes to this level of stress and the amount of kids that are considering suicide and other harmful behaviors. And I think until we really start to pay attention to what our kids are going through and acknowledge that what they're experiencing is stressful to them. Our brain does not distinguish between what we would call big and little stressors. A child who's worried about failing their math test experiences the same stress response in their brain as a child who experiences a threat of violence. And we need to help kids at a young age develop tools to build resilience to the stressful world that they're growing up in.
Michael Bradley, you've worked in these fields for a long time. When Donna's daughter comes home, I know you don't know the specific circumstances, but can you share any broad guidelines for how they can embrace her and try and move her to a path less self-destructive?
Well, first, there's lots of guilt and shame in the families that have this happen. Today we say these things are like lightning bolts because people talk about there must have been signs, you must have known. But more and more we see these teenagers with, quote, out of the blue suicide attempts. The last year, every fifth young person in America either attempted suicide or had a serious plan to suicide. So Kristen is right. This is an epidemic. It qualifies as such. The thing to do with the child is to accept, not to judge, not to pathologize, but to accept that in that moment she felt that life was not tenable for her. And rather than dismiss that and say that was stupid, you just got upset over a C and eating something unhealthy, say, I understand. I get that, that in moments, especially when we're young, we do feel that life is over, that there's no way we can do this. But then we start again. We start again saying, what happened? You know, this thing that happened to you, can we define it? Would you consider that to be a horror or a frustration? And we ask the kids to then sort these stressors into those categories. In the moment, the C can feel like a horror. Kristen is correct. Mm-hmm. It can react that way. But we do have the power to get a perspective and say, wait a minute. A horror is 24 dead babies in Newtown, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. A frustration is getting a C in my math test. So I have to kind of recalibrate what's happening within me and find a way to accept it and move on.
Donna, in Nashville, our hearts are so with you. Does that sound like useful perspective for your family, Donna?
Very much so, because when she comes home, I don't know how to handle school. Everybody wants to know where she is. Nobody really knows what happened. She is still going to be in honors classes, but we're going to have to get her caught up and take a less stressful path in doing so. And nobody's stress is going to be over after she gets out of the hospital.
Well, know this from our conversation here, that she's not alone in her circumstances and you're not alone in your family's circumstances. And we wish you very good luck here, Donna. It's not going to be an easy patch, but you can do it. Accept it and on you go with your care and love. I'm sure you can do it. Thank you for calling, Donna.
Thank you.
Let me go to Jack in Lexington, Kentucky. Jack, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hello.
I have four children and two stepchildren who've all survived their teen years more or less intact. And I'll tell you, my heart goes out to the caller from Tennessee. Just to get them through their teen years is this combination of self-imposed stress and stress from the media and the stress that parents are trying to do everything they can to give children everything that they want, everything that they need, protect them from all these outside influences. And you wind up with a stew of stress for both the parents and the kids. Kids pick up on what kind of economic problems is mom and dad having? One of my, I have twin boys, and one of my sons asked me, Dad, did you make the mortgage payment? When he was 14 years old, and I looked at him and I said,
wow.
Why would you know? He said, well, mom was worried about, and on we went on a conversation about how we arrange our lives economically and how difficult it is at times and that we have priorities.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I never asked my parents about the mortgage payment. It was, I grew up in the golden age of kids. We didn't have these kind of problems. There are problems, of course, but nothing compared to what my kids have gone through.
Jack, I appreciate your perspective. Our time's getting short before the break, but let me take it to my guests and thank you very, very much for just that. With four who've come through their teenage years, Kristen Race, what about the economy? Do you see that affecting teens? Is it from looking at their own parents' struggles? Is it their own apprehension about the world they're going into economically, whether or not they'll make it? Is that what puts this tough pressure on to, you know, be in the top school, be in the top of your class and all the rest?
Right. Well, I think the economy, certainly, if we look at the survey, it is something that is reported as a huge trigger for stress. But there are a lot of things in our lives and in our teens' lives that cause stress they're what I call hidden stressors. Things like technology, things like the schedules we keep, how much sleep we get. There are certain stressors we cannot control, things like financial problems, divorce, illness, even school pressures. But when we can identify and eliminate some of these hidden stressors, when we can modify and simplify our schedules, when we can manage the way we use technology and how much sleep we get, we can remove a whole lot of stress, both from our teens' lives and from our lives as well.
Michael Bradley, do you see the present circumstances of teens' lives as being the what brings the stress, or is it the future, them looking out at the economy, their career future? I don't know, climate change, the environment, who knows, the future of the world they're going into, which brings it?
I hate to beg the question, but it's both. Certainly there are present stressors that get to them. I do believe their look ahead at the future is usually pessimistic. Even the successful kids, I call them the West Pointers, that have the 4.25s and star athletes and so forth, do not see the future as very optimistic. They see a future of more stress, of more struggle, of trying to meet these impossible goals. And that worries me. Again, it gets us back to the subject of perfection and saying we have to give a different message to kids about what life is like.
Because, of course, you know, young people in earlier generations very often didn't face a bed of roses. You pointed out world wars, depression, you name it, upheaval, emigration. None of those were easy.
Well, the conundrum here, the irony, is that some level of stress is not only tolerable, it's therapeutic. That meeting a certain amount of stress in a healthful way, rising to the challenge, so to speak, strengthens kids. So when we research this, we see that the bell curve, too little stress weakens kids, too much stress weakens them horrendously. The appropriate level seems to be the magic. And the message to parents is not to eliminate all stress, but rather to find that magic point, the balance point, and help kids in a graduated, supported fashion.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about teen stress, now greater than adult stress. In America, we're looking at why, the long-term implications, and what to do about it. Kristen Race is with us from Steamboat Springs, Colorado, practices child, family, and school psychology there, author of Mindful Parenting. Michael Bradley is with us from Philadelphia, psychologist there, practicing for a long time with young people, author of a bunch of books, Yes, Your Teen is Crazy, Yes, Your Parents Are Crazy, a couple of them, maybe we're all crazy, but what's new? Let's go to Barbara in Topsfield, Massachusetts. Barbara, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm listening. This is a really important topic, and as a parent of a teenager that's a high achiever, I have some thoughts, my own personal experience that are limited, and I would love to have the experts speak about some of this. I've noticed that a lot of the suicides are the kids that are high achievers, and it looks to me, from my limited perspective, that it starts very young, where parents tie their own, their children's outcomes to their own, and that the kids get the message pretty early that if they're not the best sports, you know, in sports or academically, they're letting their parents down. And the parents are not particularly self-aware of this, and it builds on itself by the time they get to high school. And the parents are stressed. This isn't a judgment. Everybody's so busy with their time. They don't often have the time to reflect on this and how they're sending these messages. And the kids get to this point and don't have a lot of coping strategies. They don't have a lot of downtime. They're not taught to self-reflect. We don't have the time we used to have to, you know, sit in church. We might have, make some time to reflect or even imagine kids go on, when they have downtime in the high school years, they go on social media or video games. So I'm wondering if it's really a point in that parents need to stop and reflect on what they are expecting from their kids and separating those pieces and teaching kids to reflect on and value their individuality and not always tying their outcomes to pleasing external, you know, their parents.
Yeah, yeah.
For external validation.
Barbara, great points, and I'm glad you raise it just that way. Expectations that parents may not even know, may not be entirely aware that they're putting on their children. If I may, Kristen and Michael, let me put that up against a comment from a listener on our website who says, here's a thought. This is kind of the opposite perspective, maybe not. Many teens are the products of parents who have sheltered and essentially spoiled their children. This listener writes, you can't grow up being the object of worship and be prepared for this harsh world. Parents are not doing their job properly. So, Kristen, what about it? Setting crazy expectations and then kids feel like failures if they don't meet them, or too much coddling, or could those two be simultaneous somehow?
I think they are simultaneous. On one hand, we're pushing kids to do more at earlier ages, involving them in as many activities as we possibly can. And then on the other hand, we prevent them from making developmentally appropriate mistakes by hovering and rescuing. One of the first things I talk to families about is how you communicate your family values, which are beliefs we hold about the important issues in life. Most families rarely communicate these values to each other intentionally. And this can be really confusing for teens and cause stress and anxiety. It's important to make an effort to communicate our family values directly and overtly through a series of formal and informal conversations.
Do you mean values, you know, what we prize, or is it also somehow coping strategies get embedded in that kind of conversation?
You know, it's both. So take the family dinner. Ask yourselves as a family, how do we define success? What traits are important to us? Is it beauty? Is it financial success? Is it popularity or integrity? Without this direct communication of these values, teens make assumptions, and they become stressed because they have an inaccurate perception of what your values and expectations really are. In our family, we play a game around the dinner table called Rose, Bud, Thorn. And each member of the family goes around the table and describes their rose, which is something good they experience over the course of their day, their bud, which is something they're looking forward to, and their thorn, which is a mistake that they learned from today. And I think we, as a culture, just like we've been talking about, we're so focused on being perfect. And kids feel like being perfect is the only way to be. So when they can understand that mistakes are an opportunity for growth, and that adults make mistakes too, it can really ease a lot of stress. And they're very clear about what's important to them and to their family.
Michael Bradley, you talked earlier, it relates to what Kristen's saying, I think, about extrinsic and intrinsic goals or outlooks. That decades ago, teens would say they wanted to grow up to be a good person, and now they want to grow up to achieve certain things, maybe even material things. What do you think is pushing that difference?
Well, I think that the culture has pushed that difference. My wife and I fret over this all the time because we essentially grew up, in today's definition, poor, and we really like the way we grew up. and we have too much to give to our kids, and we really fret about making things too easy, giving them a sense that this is the way the world works, and a lot of parents fret over that. I think Kristen is correct about kids assuming things. Kids will fill in all the blanks if the parents don't proactively step up and write out the value, to write out the lesson.
Including the things that may ease the way. You don't have to be a superstar.
Absolutely, and that's why I love Kristen's exercise there. And we teach parents in parenting classes to model how you handle stress. Open that up to your kids in age-appropriate terms.
Mm-hmm.
But talk about the setback at work, the lawsuit that you lost after working on it 3 months, and how much that hurt and how bad that made you feel, and then what you did about it.
The perspective you bring to it. Yeah. I wonder on this pressure on extrinsic achievement, if there's something about the erosion of our American middle class that kids are picking up on here, that if decades ago there was a broad assumption, not everybody got there, but a broad assumption that whatever you did, you'd be okay in our economy. And today, that's maybe less clear.
I think that's a huge piece, Tom. We're seeing this kind of polarization where we have the wealthy getting wealthier, and the middle class has slipped, and they do not have the hopes of people in the past. And that's an interesting aspect, this duality of stress, how it affects different parts of kids socioeconomically.
Ashley in Superior, Wisconsin. Ashley, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi. I was calling in. I'm 20 years old. I'm currently a college student. And because of that, I have, a perspective into some of the stressors that kids experience and I'm still experiencing. I went to a private high school, and I'm also the only child on my mom's side of the family.
Okay.
So I was, my grandparents' only grandchild. My aunt didn't have a kid, so I'm her only niece. So because of that, everyone in the family was kind of counting on me to do well. And then with going to this high school, we were required to be in sports. We were encouraged to be in extracurricular. So I was in two or three other clubs. I was volunteering. I was in sports every season. Throughout the course of my education, I took 7 AP classes.
Wow.
And, I was encouraged to apply to really difficult, strenuous colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And then on top of that, as I got older, my mom shared with me that she had filed for bankruptcy, and every summer I was working, and it was always this, we don't want the same thing that happened to us to happen to you. We don't want that for you. So with the way that I was doing in school, they were like, you need to pick this high-profile career. You need to be a doctor, a lawyer, whatever the case may be, where you're going to be able to not have to worry about those things. And because of that, I worried about my family, and I worry about, am I going to be able to make it? Am I going to be able to survive? Am I going to be able to pay all my bills? And things like that. And that, I think, puts an incredible amount of stress on teenagers.
Ashley, you've just made it out of your teen years. You're 20 years old. You're just beyond it. Do you still feel that kind of pressure, that stress?
I do. I transferred colleges at the beginning of the school year, and I transferred to University of Wisconsin Superior, and I tried to make it on my own, working full time and paying for an apartment and everything, and I couldn't do it. I'm back in with my parents now, and that I think has even added to my stress because I know that I have to get a job where I'm going to make more than I was. Otherwise, I'm not going to be able to make it because I still have their help with health insurance and car insurance and cell phone bills. I was paying my rent and I was paying my internet and putting gas in my car and doing car maintenance. But
hey, Ashley, stand by. Let me get one of our good guests here to just think about your circumstance with you. Kristen, here's Ashley. She's just out of her teenage years. You hear that list of things weighing on her even now. Of course, all young people are thinking about, how am I going to get started in life? Where do I find my feet? What's your advice to Ashley and how to approach that challenge set, Kristen?
Well, I think one of the most important things for people to understand when it comes to managing stress is what stress is. And I have found it very helpful for teens and even for young kids to explain what the stress response is in the brain. And in its most simple form, I talk about two parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, which is by our forehead. And this is a smart part of our brain. It helps us pay attention, solve problems, think positively. It helps us work and learn efficiently. And the alarm part of our brain, and this is the fight, flight, or freeze part of our brain. When we have hectic lives and we're feeling all of these pressures to perform and to succeed, we are constantly stimulating that alarm part of our brain. And when the alarm part of your brain is constantly stimulated, like it sounds like it is for Ashley and it is for so many teens, they can't access the part of their brain that helps them solve problems, that helps them pay attention, that helps them think positively. This explains why teens report getting lower grades because of stress, why they can't see past their bad day or their bad grade. But the good news is that we can change this pattern when we can be intentional about how we communicate with our teens, when we can eliminate some of the hidden stressors in our lives. And for Ashley, I would think about engaging in simple practices to help build resilience to the stress in your life. We can engage that prefrontal cortex, and this calms the fight-or-flight response and makes that smart part of our brain stronger, more efficient, and easier to use.
So the bite-sized pieces, think it through, and if you can, calm down a little bit as we go. You know, Ashley, listening to you, I think you've got a good head on your shoulders. I think you're going to do fine. You know, settle it down one step at a time. Easy to say, hard to do, we know, but I think you're going to be just fine, Ashley, and I appreciate your sharing your circumstances with us. Linda in Sharon, Massachusetts. Linda, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Tom?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'll try to be as brief as I can. My husband's a high school teacher, and we had a conversation last night that I thought might tie into this program. He, first of all, tries to have a very safe classroom in that no one ever criticizes what anybody else says or does or giggles or laughs or whatever. He feels the safe environment in a classroom is very, very important. But the real point I want to make is he finds that the students that come to him can never make a mistake. They are so embarrassed if they don't know the answer. And he tries to tell them that, number one, they're in school because they don't know. And how are you going to learn if you don't admit you don't know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that he tries to make them realize they're competing against themselves. They're not competing against the whole world. And that simplifies life if you can kind of get that in your head. It's also good for anybody to come to that conclusion. It doesn't have to be a teen.
Just, I'll do better than I did yesterday. I don't have to do better than everybody else in the United States of America today. Linda, our time is short. Those are both good perspectives as well, and I appreciate them. Michael Bradley, we've scarcely touched on social media, and I wonder, given what a large part of teen lives these days that tends to be, how you see that playing through in a beneficial or a non-beneficial way, or maybe it's not a black and white answer at all.
Well, the older I get, the more black it becomes as opposed to white. I'm very concerned about the social media impact on young teenagers.
Why?
It's sort of like it's living out your life in the Super Bowl in front of 50,000 people. It's just way too much exposure. I see kids becoming obsessed with trying to maintain the perceptions.
Brand management around themselves, kind of?
Absolutely. It's like a corporation trying to, you know, tamp down bad rumors and promote their own image. It's incredibly destructive. It's all extrinsic. They're not working on their internal values or serenity or health. It's all about managing a public perception.
And the time it takes, Kristen Race, is the time that eases their stress because it's socializing and they may find comfort in their friends or something else?
You know, it actually causes stress in so many ways. So much of our communication is nonverbal, and we lose that when we're communicating through screens and texts and on social media. And I agree with Michael. So much of it is, I think, for teens, I don't feel as happy as you look on Facebook. we, like the woman mentioned earlier, we Photoshop our lives, and we put the perfect pictures and the perfect places and the perfect outfits, and we are creating this brand for ourselves. And unfortunately, when teens look at that, they can't possibly compare. So it creates a tremendous amount of stress. If you think about when you were in high school, during the school day, you probably wore certain things or talked to certain people or wanted to create a certain image for yourself. We now have expanded that to 24 hours a day. Not only are we doing that during school hours, but we're coming home and expected to keep up these posts and engage in these conversations, in a lot of cases, through the night.
That seems
and
like a lot to deal with.
An incredible amount of pressure.
You say, make it face-to-face. Deal with real people where you see the whole person and you'll have a truer, wholer vision of life. You say, have the family dinner. Sit down. Break bread. Talk to one another.
Engage face-to-face. If there's one thing that you're going to do, make it the family dinner. Put your cell phones and technology away and take time to enjoy the people you care about most.
Life is long. You don't have to do it all right now. You don't have to be perfect. We wish teens some ease on that front, even as they strive for great things. Kristen Race in Steamboat Springs, Colorado. Thank you so much for being with us today, Kristen.
My pleasure, Tom. Thank you for having me.
Author of Mindful Parenting and Michael Bradley, author of Yes, Your Teen is Crazy, Yes, Your Parents are Crazy. Michael, thank you for joining us from Philadelphia.
My pleasure, Tom.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.